Welcome to the Pata Martins podcast. My name is Céline Terranova. I'm an author and brand new podcaster here to help you in your creative career. This show is all about advice, support, and inspiration for performers, writers, musicians, and any kind of artist. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 4 of the Pata Martins podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the first 3 episodes, or if it's the first time you're listening to me, welcome. Today, my guest is Vicky Brewster. She's an editor, an academic, and an accountant, and she also worked on my book. I guarantee you this interview is super interesting. But first, let's talk about the latest news for the Pata Martins. I'll be on holiday when this episode is posted, so the blog is a bit less active than usual, but I still posted an article last week about how to deal with your inner critic. And this article is giving you techniques to silence the voices that tell you that you're not good enough, because I guarantee you, you are good enough. And another news, I am designing a free course called The Secret to Attracting Fans, How to Build an Enthusiastic Audience for Your Creative Business. That will be for those of you who want to reach more people with your art. I'm still designing it at the moment, but it will be ready soon, and I will definitely give you an update once it's online. Right, that's all for the news. As usual, if you enjoyed the show, please leave a review. If you find this show helpful, you might be interested in the extra content that I post on Patreon. Patreon is a website where you can support artists like me, and it works a little bit like a crowdfunding website. So you pledge to give a certain amount of money per month and you get extra bonuses. I have 3 tiers for now, one at $2 per month, one at $8 and one at $15. And the first bonus is already available. It's an extra episode of the podcast and the title is Find Your Direction as an Artist. I really enjoyed doing it and I think it's quite interesting to listen to. So if you're interested in becoming one of my patrons, head to patreon.com/thepartimeartist, patreon.com/thepartimeartist. So today my guest is editor extraordinaire, Vicky Brewster. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming in the show and for being here. And I'm so excited about this interview because I think it's going to be super interesting. Now, for people who don't know you, if you could maybe introduce yourself for the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Vicky Brewster. I am a freelance editor working directly for authors, usually when they are either coming up to the querying stage, if they're going traditional publishing, or if they are looking to self-publish. I work on story structure as well as doing line edits. And yeah, I like to work really collaboratively with my clients and just try and make stories the best that they can be.
Yes, and you are a multi-talented woman too. So you're not doing, you're not just being an editor, you do other stuff also on the side, I know.
Yeah, so I'm also an academic. I've just been accepted to start my PhD at Swansea University. And that's in English, but it's looking specifically at 21st century hauntings. I love contemporary horror fiction, so that's really exciting. And I'm also at the moment trying to organise a writing retreat, which should take place hopefully in February next year.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that towards the end of the interview because I'm so excited about it. Of course, I know all about it, but yeah, let's talk about your work as an editor first. So I know that you quit, you had a job, a full-time job last year, and you quit it to pursue this business full-time. Now, I know that there's a lot of people listening to this who want to do exactly the same. They want to quit their job and to go into their business, creative business or other full-time. Now, how did you do it?
Well, so when I decided that I didn't want to be an accountant anymore and I wanted to be an editor, I assumed that it was going to be a very slow process. So I had planned to kind of do editing work maybe in the evenings and weekends, and then maybe after 6 months go part-time, and then if it turned out to be financially viable, go on full-time. Mm-hmm. So that's not what happened. So when I started taking commissions, they started coming in very quickly. And I have more work than I can handle. So I straight away basically discussed going part-time with work. They were really dragging their heels and making things very awkward. So after a discussion with my husband, I quit. That was in August last year, and I've been working full time at editing ever since. So it's been fantastic.
That's amazing. Did you, so I know that you didn't think it would go so quickly, but did you have sort of a business plan to say, okay, I need to earn that much money and then I quit? Or was it more like I need to have that many jobs as an editor and then I quit?
Yeah, it was a case of how much time I had to offer, really. And at the point at which I was going to be booked up kind of 3 or 4 months in advance was the point, I guess, I realized where I could say, actually, if I do this full time, I can edit 15,000 words a day. I've still got enough work to take me past the end of the month. At the time, I started charging very low rates because I was new. I'd done a lot of editing work previously for free for friends and that kind of thing. But obviously, to build up a client base, I wanted to start off reflecting my experience compared to other people in the market. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm at a point now where I'm almost charging normal rates. I'm still quite low. But yeah, the work is still coming in. There have been weird dry patches, but I've always had enough work to carry on full time.
And how did you find your first clients? Because you said you immediately had quite a lot of bookings. How did you manage to get these people to trust you at first?
So this was really surprising for me because I had previously worked as a ghostwriter and had got all of my commissions through websites like Fiverr and Freelancer. I quickly found that I wasn't going to get any editing work that way. I was bidding for projects and there were so many editors kind of undercutting me who obviously had the time to do it full time and do a really quick turnaround. So that just didn't work for me. So I moved on to social media, particularly Twitter. I love Twitter. I'm there all the time. I probably spend much more time there than I should.
Same for me, believe me.
But yeah, on Twitter, it's quite easy, I guess, to build up an idea of yourself. And also, as you know, the writing community on Twitter is so huge and supportive. I think it became quite easy for clients to get a feel for who I was, which the editor-writer relationship is quite a close one. And when you think about how much people care about their creative body, it's a big thing to share that with someone else. So I think personality is almost as important as what you're able to offer professionally. So
absolutely.
Yeah, social media offered a way definitely for people to get to know me before approaching me professionally.
That I can say from the point of view of a client, because you edited two of my books, that's exactly how I came in contact with you. It's Twitter. And then I could see your tweets, I visited your website, and I just had a good feeling. You know, it's the kind of thing, social media allows you to show your personality and you click with certain kind of personality. And I really needed someone who would understand what I'm trying to do with my books. And I thought, you know what, that person, she's not going to just do it for the money. She also just will help me bring it to the next level. And all of that is just because I was reading your tweets, I was interacting with you on Twitter, and that really helped.
Yeah, Twitter does enable you to show if you're a genuine person. And I think that there are a lot of people who work in the writing industry, not just writers, but editors, agents, people who work in publishing, that kind of thing, do definitely utilize Twitter. But what you said about the website is also a big thing. In my day job, I had done quite a bit of work around personal branding. I know that might sound surprising as an accountant, but marketing and that side of things was very important to what I did. So I knew that it was important to kind of have a brand or an image that followed me across all platforms. So my logo is on my Twitter, on my website, on my Facebook. Everything looks the same, and it's a very clear brand.
Yeah,
and I think that that helps.
Absolutely. It's so important, because for any kind of business person, if you're trying to get people to know you, to know your brand, to recognize it, you have to be very consistent. I have the same picture on all my social media too. I have really consistent things everywhere. For the same reason, branding is very important, and that's probably something that most people don't really consider from the beginning. And it's great that you had it from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, something that had been said to me before I quit my job was that personal branding is all about what you want people to say about you when you're not in the room, and to think about kind of what those keywords are that you want people to think about you. So mine are reliable, efficient, and passionate. And I try and portray that with everything that I do and everything that I publish online.
I love that. Personal branding is how you want people to talk about you when you're not in the room.
Yeah.
That's genius. I never heard it said like that, actually. Oh, that's amazing. Well, and about your business again, do you have any projections for the future now that you have been almost a year in business? What are your plans for this business?
So what I found really exciting is now that we're almost a year in, I've started getting repeat customers. So clients like yourself, I've done two of your books now, but who were writing the first part in the series are onto the second part, and I'm starting to get that, and I'm getting second edits in where people have been through all their revisions and they want me just to go through it a second time. So building up a reliable client base is really important for me, and I find that really exciting, and kind of thinking about the Vicky family, having you all around and kind of being able to work together. But yeah, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, I'm working on trying to put together a writing retreat, which is really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are a lot of retreats out there, but I'm hoping that as our kind of unique selling point, we're looking at the kind of houses that maybe you might read about in Gothic horror. So they're the old crumbling grade one listed buildings that no one is bothering to put an upkeep into, and being able to stay there for a weekend and kind of really soak up the atmosphere and that kind of thing, I'm hoping is going to be something that excites other people as much as it excites me.
It is very exciting. I must say, I'm a wuss. Like ghost stories and stuff like that, it terrifies me. So yeah, I'm looking forward to being there and being terrified the whole weekend.
Well, as you know, I'm a LARPer. I do live action role play, and a lot of the games that I play and run are horror games. So I'm used to creating an atmosphere.
See, you know, I'm the kind of person who cannot watch a horror movie without having nightmares. Like, to tell you the thing, I've watched Bird Box and I had nightmares after that. And it's not even a horror film. So
the book is definitely horror. The book has one moment that creeped me out more than I think anything else that I've read.
Okay, well,
I won't say what it is.
Yeah, let's not spoil it. Well, let's keep talking about books, and let's talk about your work with writers, because you work with artists basically on a daily basis, and I know that it probably has its challenges, but what do you think are the biggest issues for the writers you work with, and also maybe pointers of how they can overcome them?
Oh, bloody creatives. That's my swan song every day, bloody creatives. So yeah, I guess some of the challenges that can be faced are kind of twofold. It can be getting writers to think about things practically and to think about what they're doing as a job, as a business. Because I think there is a kind of stigma about wanting to make money out of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
There's that kind of humble, starving author ideal, which really shouldn't be an ideal. If you want to make money out of what you do, then you need to think about it practically, and you need to think about where the money is going to come from. Another joy that I face is that writers seem to be really obsessed with typos and think that they're the worst thing in the world, when in actual fact, whether your story works is the most important thing. And that's going to be most of what an edit is. I think that there's a lot of misconception, especially from first-time authors, about what an editor is going to do and what they're looking for and what it is that winds us up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I had the same misconception because I've worked with better readers before, but better readers mostly were working on, yeah, the typos, the things that didn't make sense and things like that. Well, the work that you did, and especially on my novel, was not only typos, you also did that, but also just making sure that the story works and the chapters work and the characters make sense. And that's way more important.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, anyone can read through a manuscript and spot a typo. But the reason that you're paying an editor is because an editor has an understanding of how story works and how characters work and what a reader is going to be expecting from their experience. I used to, in my academic life, really follow reader response theory, which is the idea that there are three different areas. There's the author, the text, and the reader, and they all do and have very different things. So when I'm editing, I try and put myself in the position of the reader and say, okay, what's my journey? What are my expectations from this story? Am I satisfied by it? Because at the end of the day, your reader is your consumer and it's them that you want to make happy. You want to make a repeat customer out of them. You want to make sure they're having a really good time from your novel.
Absolutely. Now, I know that paying for an editor is quite a budget. What would you say to an author who's hesitating because it's quite expensive between having an editor or just like trying their luck with agents or publishers without an editor?
I understand totally that I am a luxury. Mm-hmm. And that sucks. I definitely wish that I could work for free.
Because but you need to pay your bills.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to pay my bills. But I would say that I did work for free for some time. You know, I worked looking at friends' stories and going to critique groups and that kind of thing. So there is definitely value in finding the right friend who will give you a decent point of view or the right beta reader or the right critique partner. I wouldn't say that having an editor is going to make or break your novel. But I think, A, it's very important to get another point of view on your writing, preferably one who is going to give you an honest opinion. And I think, secondly, that editors do offer something that other writers don't. I've had clients tell me that they've shown their work to other writers and the problem they get is their feedback is based on how that person would write the story rather than having someone who almost chameleons into what they're looking to do and how they're trying to write it and understanding that and saying, I see what you're trying to do. It's not quite working. Have you thought of this?
Absolutely. I think from my point of view, because I knew that I wanted an editor for quite a long time, simply because English is not my native language. So I knew that I needed someone anyway to correct all the French that creeped in through the text. But I also needed someone to just help me not hate my novel anymore. Because after two long drafts that took me months to write, I just got to the point where I just hated the story. And I was just like, it's not good, I hate it, it's not what I wanted. And having someone, as you say, who's neutral but understands what you want to say with it is super helpful in terms of kind of making you feel better about what you've been writing for months.
And I would say that you're definitely not alone in getting to a point where you just hate your manuscript. That's something I hear a lot. And something else that always surprises me is a lot of the authors that I come across seem to think that there is a good manuscript and a bad manuscript and there is nothing in the middle. It's either perfect or it's irredeemable. And I would never say that to a writer. I think I've definitely had manuscripts that maybe haven't been ready for an editor yet and have needed some extra work. But I would never say to someone, no, just give up on this story. It's obviously not for you.
You know what? I think that's the fear. A lot of people literally, I thought about that too. I thought that maybe you were going to send it back and be like, eh, no, just like yourself another career. It's the fear of an artist, I think. It's just the rejection, the fear of just not being understood at all. But now we're going to talk about something completely different because, as you said earlier, before being an editor, you were an accountant, which is kind of a mix that we don't see a lot. Someone who's like really specialist in finance and stuff like that, and then someone who understands artists. It's kind of a blend that I don't see a lot. So can you give us advice for artists who need to deal with their finances?
Okay, so the first thing that I see crop up a lot is creatives asking whether they should be a sole trader or if they should make themselves a limited company. I would say, finance-wise, stay as small as you can for as long as you can, because the smaller you are, the simpler things are. If you are just your little one-man band, you can get very cheap or free accounting software. You don't have to deal with tax for the most part. You don't have to deal with VAT. You just need to be able to record your income and your expenses, and remember that books count as expenses, supplies count as expenses. Anything that is related to your industry is tax deductible, and you need to remember that. But that's the main thing, main misconception that people seem to have is they think that they need to become a limited company. And really, the only benefit of being a limited company, well, there isn't really one at that smaller business. The point of a limited company is to be able to have shareholders. And as a creative, generally, you're working on your own. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I think it is a misconception, because when you start to get to be an entrepreneur, you have so much advice online. Mm. And so much advice is for entrepreneur in different areas. So let's say probably, you know, people who do more financial stuff, people who do more like technology stuff and things like that, who might need to have employees very quickly. And in that point, if you have employees, it might be that you have to become a limited company much quicker.
Not true at all. I have an employee. I see.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that.
No, so I have a wonderful assistant called Abigail. She's amazing. I couldn't carry on without her. And because she only works an hour a week for me, I don't have to be registered with HMRC as an employer. She doesn't pay tax because I pay her under the tax threshold. The only evidence that I need to keep is what I pay her every fortnight. And that's it.
Oh, I see. So it really depends on the scale of what you do.
Yeah, HMRC's website is really good and really straightforward. They also have a helpline, and the people on that helpline are actually helpful and know what they're talking about. But this is what I'm saying. Keep it small for as long as possible. Because there's like a threshold, I can't remember what it is. I think it's something like £100 a week, where if I go over that, I suddenly have to register for a whole load of stuff, and I have to get payroll software and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But while it's small, I can do it all on spreadsheets.
I see. Yeah, I use spreadsheets for my expenses, my revenues and things like that. When you start, you don't need something complicated. You just need to keep a track of everything. Now, I must say, I have read a lot on the HMRC website, which is, if you guys are not in the UK, it's the tax website for the UK. You probably have the equivalent in your country. There are some stuff that I feel, in my position as an artist who doesn't understand anything about taxes, I feel like it's made more complicated than what it needs to be. And I feel like that's what most people think about taxes.
Okay. I think the difficulty that you're having, I know, with your audience are part-time artists. So the issue is that they're going to be probably paid through the PAYE system, which for our foreign listeners is it's an automatic tax deduction that happens through payroll software, usually, if you're paid over the tax threshold for income. So a problem that a lot of our listeners are going to be having is that they have tax deductions, but then they also have their self-employment income. Personally, I use QuickBooks, which is super cheap if you're a self-employed person, and it deals with the tax calculations for my job, because obviously last financial year I worked full-time through the PAYE system for half of the year, and then the other half of the year I have a self-employment income, and it just deals with that for you. If you don't want to have accounting software, if you do just want to do everything through spreadsheets, I think as long as you are clearly keeping an idea of your income and your expenses, keeping them separate, knowing what dates they happen on — dates are very, very important in accounting — the self-assessment tax form for HMRC is quite good. It's quite user-friendly. So hopefully you will still be able to work out where everything goes. But again, keep it simple.
Absolutely.
As much as possible.
I will put a link to QuickBooks in the show notes, because I've just created an account. So I'm really excited to have something that does the job for me. So I will put a link for everyone who's interested. But I think there's also a lot of things that people don't necessarily know about, because like me, they kind of avoid the subject of taxes like the plague. So it's really interesting, because the more you research into it, the more you understand how it works. And things like expenses, there's a lot of things that you can declare as your expenses, as you said, books, but also if you're working completely from home, you can declare part of your rent, if I understand correctly,
and part of your utilities, especially your broadband connection.
Yeah, you just have to prove that you are using part of it for your business.
And because you are a small business entity, your calculations are unlikely to be heavily scrutinized. So as long as you have a rough idea of, say, I work in my office, I don't know, 20 hours a week, it is a quarter of my house, therefore a quarter of whatever that calculation is, that much of my utilities I will count as my expenses. For the most part, HMRC, unless it looks like you're claiming like £20,000, they're likely to just go, okay, yeah, that looks about right, and not scrutinize it too hard. But just as long as you've got your vague idea of the calculation in the background, that should be fine.
Yeah, I think the best advice I can give to people, especially people like me who think that taxes is their kryptonite, just go at it slowly. Start reading stuff. Don't overwhelm yourself, but just start reading stuff, ask questions, because if you are starting to get into a business, a creative business, you can't avoid these discussions. Finance, taxes, if you're trying to make money, this is something you will have to learn and you will have to get comfortable with, because if you're not comfortable with, chances are you're not going to make, you know, a good job in taxes and in money. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think also only worrying about things as they come up is a good idea. So it can get very overwhelming to kind of fall down the rabbit hole of, oh my goodness, well, is my uniform, do I have a uniform, does it count as tax deductible, and all that kind of thing. Only worry about it if it's relevant. And
but don't do your taxes on the last day.
Oh no, definitely. This is why dating is so important as well, because I don't know what it's like in other countries, but in the UK our tax year ends around the beginning of April. We then don't have to file a tax return until January, and we don't have to pay the taxes on that return until the following October. So it's a long gap in between, and it's worth doing things in advance, even if the deadline is months down the line, just to know that it's done and to know that you know how much you're going to need to pay, because the reason there's that massive gap is to make sure that you are able to pay your tax at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when I used to work in theatre and I was seeing a lot of performers dealing with that, a lot of them were doing it very last minute, like the last week or the last day. And then those who were really relaxed is because they did it as soon as April was there. They just organised everything, is all ready, they know how much they have to pay. And also during the year, they all saved something like 20%, 25% of everything they earned. So they knew that they had that money in a different account. And I think that's a good advice, to just have automatically, the same way they take taxes from your normal employee money, just take it for, you know, for the taxes before. And I think that really helps.
It's the nice thing, I don't want to be like a an advertisement for QuickBooks, but it's the other nice thing about having an accounting software is it will calculate your tax as you go along. So it can tell you how much you need to put aside each month. The other thing to keep in mind, if you're thinking of making that leap from part-time to full-time, is you are probably not going to pay tax in your first year or two, because you are probably going to make a financial loss. That doesn't mean that you're not going to have any income to take home with you, but a lot of that income automatically goes into things that are tax deductible once you become full-time, like your utilities or materials or travel to go to conventions, which are part of your work, which is where an awful lot of my money goes. I think people get quite worried when you say you're unlikely to make a profit in your first 2 years. But it's getting your head around the idea of having a financial profit and an actual take home.
Yes, completely.
They're quite different things.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
making a financial loss is a good thing in many respects.
Yeah, and it's normal at the beginning, I think. I had exactly the same. Now I've finished my first, it was not a real full year because I only quit my job in January to start this, but I made a loss because I had so many expenses to start this business. That's how it works. And that's the kind of things you have to also take in account when you decide, okay, I'm going to quit my job by then. Okay, but that means that I need to have all these expenses maybe paid before.
And because setting up a home office, especially I think when you go into it full time, I hadn't appreciated, like when I was working in evenings and weekends, I would just have my laptop on my lap on the sofa, and now I have a desk and a desk chair and special lighting and nice things, because suddenly you're spending so much more time doing the thing.
Oh, absolutely. I started having RSI just because I was using, you know, my laptop so much. That's the kind of things that you don't really necessarily expect before you do it full time.
Insurance is another fun one.
Oh, interesting.
So when I took on an employee, I discovered that I needed to have employer's liability insurance, even though Abby works completely remotely. She doesn't, she lives in Norwich, I live in South Wales. But I still need to have insurance in case I screw up something to do with my employee. And then I discovered that, normally when I go for insurance anywhere, I would go to a comparison website and I would type in my stuff and find out a quote and go, oh, that's a nice low quote. But none of the insurance companies are kind of set up for creative pursuits. I had to go to a local insurance broker in Swansea who took me through an awful lot of forms to try and work out what my insurance coverage would be. And that was quite surprising for me. And it's not a huge amount, but it is something that took a lot longer and was a lot more faff than I expected it to be. And they did tell me at the time that I should have got insurance before. I should have had public liability insurance because I'm working with other people's stuff, even though there's nothing I can really do to mess it up. But yeah. That was interesting.
That is very interesting. Actually, yeah. It reminds me of when I made a short film and I had to look into these things for simply the insurance for the building where we were, for the people I employed during the film, even though they were not paid technically. Yeah. But I was paying their expenses and it was enough, and just if something happened. So yeah, insurance, like a great, great thing that is often forgotten.
It's often forgotten, and it's also not as easy to set up as you expect it to be.
No, if you had to go to a broker, yeah, you couldn't do it online. Oh my god.
I called like Direct Line and somewhere else, because I initially put on all the forms that I worked in publishing, because there wasn't a category for being an editor, and I was getting these enormous quotes and thinking, oh my god, that can't really be what my insurance is going to cost. And the reason being that obviously if you're publishing, you're actually producing somebody's book, and you therefore have a lot of liability for how it looks and how it sells and selling the rights and dealing with the copyright and all of that kind of thing. Whereas being an editor, I'm not liable for a great deal, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, but they're not breaking their books.
No, no.
Maybe they
not.
Think they do. Now, you said earlier that you just started a PhD. Congratulations, by the way. Now, that I'm amazed by all the things that you do. How do you find time to do all of that?
I have no idea. I guess it all interlinks, and I do very much think of everything as interlinking, because with the academic stuff, I study contemporary literature. And it's actually really interesting, because now that I'm an editor, I spend a lot of time going to writing cons. So I'm actually meeting and talking to a lot of the writers that I write about academically. So it does all link up. There's definite connections. But I guess also I hate being bored.
I totally relate to that.
Yeah. When I quit my job, I had a mentor at work who knew me very well. And was quite shocked when I told him that I was going to quit to become an editor full time. And his first initial question was, how are you going to stop yourself getting bored?
And here's why. It is how. Yeah. You're going to do a PhD.
A PhD, run a writing retreat, organize my Patreon stuff.
I think that's the thing when you're an entrepreneur, you always find something new to do. Always.
And that's a fantastic way to do things as well, because you shouldn't, I think it's a mistake to see yourself as doing one thing when you work in a creative industry, because there are so many interconnecting things. It's like when I started out, I thought, okay, I'm going to be an editor of long form fiction because that's what people write. And I'm now starting to gain a reputation for editing short stories, which I didn't think anyone would want an editor for, but they do.
Yeah, because I can talk from my own experience. The competition to get into a magazine is fierce. So having an editor, it gives you an edge, definitely.
But it's also, I feel like part of why I'm good at that is because I spent some time volunteering as a slush reader for a publication that publishes science fiction short stories. And I learned about that from going to a con, and it all connects up. And I think a very important thing if you're going into a creative industry is to say yes to things and to try different things. And this is part of why you're not going to make a profit in your first year, because you're busy going all over the country to work out which cons are the ones worth going to. And you're maybe spending some of your time volunteering to do something to learn how to do it properly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, my last question already. What is your best piece of advice for the listeners of The Part-Time Artist?
It follows on from that, really. It's think wide and believe in yourself. What I mean by think wide is, like I said, don't narrow yourself down into, for example, okay, I'm an actor, I will only act in dry dramas, I'm not going to look at musical theatre, I'm not going to look at performance art, I'm not going to look at anything else, I'm just going to focus on this one thing. because you don't know what you're going to be good at and you don't know what you're going to love. So keep your mind wide. And the more you diversify, the more potential strands of income you have and the potential to grow in different ways. And you never know what's going to turn out to be useful, what's going to turn out to be a useful skill. And the be confident part of that is, if you don't believe in yourself, how are other people meant to? And I know that there's this ideal of the artist or the writer or whatever as this kind of tortured person who doesn't really believe in themselves and needs validation from other people, but you don't. If you are a part-time artist, it's because you believe in yourself enough to think that you can do this part-time and potentially full-time. And it's okay to believe that. It's okay for you to believe in yourself and to say, I'm good at this, I'm going to give it a crack.
Oh my God, that is so inspiring. I need to basically just put that on loop on my phone or something. And every time I feel like, oh, I'm doing everything is crap and everything I write is horrible, I'm just going to replay that. Because you are so right. And it is the most difficult thing, I think, as an artist, is to keep that confidence level or at least feeling good about what you do every day, because it's easy to be confident one day, but then the next day you have something that puts you down a little bit and you have to literally bring yourself up. And that's a very difficult skill to learn, is to keep an emotional level that allows you to keep working.
I'm not gonna lie, I have days where I think, oh my God, I've not even been doing this for a year. I've not had any client inquiries for 2 months. Oh my God, they've worked out that I'm a total phony and I'm rubbish at my job. But I like to think that doesn't last usually more than a day. I have a cry and then I get up and I think, okay, how can I fix this?
I have exactly the same, honestly. And it is, yeah, sometimes you will have bad days, but that's the whole skill of, and especially being an entrepreneur, you can't really allow yourself to have a week where you do nothing just because you feel bad. So you have to kind of limit yourself to one day where you just feel bad, and then the next day you just have to go back to work.
I think having a community is a part of that as well, because I've had, like I've said, I've had times where I've been like, oh my God, that's one thing that happened recently. I had loads of hits to my website, but somehow that wasn't turning into client inquiries and I couldn't work out why. So I sat with Abby, my assistant, and we had a brainstorming session about, okay, what can we do to market at the moment? And what came out of that were another 3 inquiries, which gave us work to the end of June. Having a community and being able to ask other people for ideas and check out what they're doing is a good thing, because luckily we're not, well, I can only speak for writers, but we're not in a competitive industry. We're in the kind of industry where if someone likes a book, they'll go and buy another book. They're not just going to read that book forever. So it's good if all of us succeed.
Absolutely.
Which means that we can share information.
Absolutely. I put it in the book towards the end, is a high tide rise all boats. Yeah, you know, you don't have to be competitive with everyone, just help each other. That's a much more, confident and a much more positive mindset to be in.
Mm.
Now, if people are interested, maybe they're looking for an editor or they just want to chat with you, where can they find you?
They can find me pretty much all day long on Twitter. So on Twitter, I am at VProofreader. I'm also on Facebook at facebook.com/VickyBrewsterEditor. My email is VickyBrewsterEditor.com. And you can also email me at info@VickyBrewsterEditor.com.
Mm-hmm. And your website is VickyBrewsterEditor.com, right?
Yes, it is. VickyBrewsterEditor.com. Mm-hmm. Keep saying it.
I will put all those links so that people can click on them in the show notes so that you can have all of that directly. And do you want to talk a little bit about your coming project and especially the writing haunt? We have talked about a little bit, but just a bit more details.
Yeah, absolutely. So the writing haunt is currently on Crowdfunder. We are crowdfunding to get the deposit to put down on the house so that we can actually run the event. The Crowdfunder website is crowdfunder.co.uk/thewritinghaunt, all one. Oh, no, sorry, the hyphen. writing hyphen haunt.
Oh, okay, yes.
It's an awkward one, but if you can put it in the links.
Definitely will do.
Great. So yeah, what we're planning is a 3-night weekend fully catered where you'll be staying in this grade one listed Tudor mansion in mid Wales. It's got loads of original features. It's got these amazing massive fireplaces that you can stand in, and there's a priest hole, which is like a little hidden cubby hole under the floorboards where you can go in and do whatever. Right, preferably. So Celine is going to be there.
Yes!
Yay! Alex, who organises Edgelit, which is a horror sci-fi fantasy convention, is also going to be there. We're all going to be running workshops all weekend. If we raise enough money, we are inviting a super secret, for now, mystery guest who is a multi-award winning author. She's amazing. I would really, really love for her
so
to come. through the crowdfunder you can book deposits for tickets. You can also book for a one-to-one session with me, and if you're not able to come but are still interested, you can also purchase recordings of all the workshops that we're going to be running.
Well, that's awesome. So I will put all these links in the show notes so you guys can have a look. Thank you so much, Vicky, for being with me today. I was really looking forward to this interview because I knew it was going to be full of information, and I think you didn't disappoint at all. And thank you, listeners, for listening to the podcast again. And if you enjoyed this, don't forget to leave us a review. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Pater Matis podcast. If you want more advice and inspiration, head to the website, thepatermartisinoneword.com, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review if you enjoyed the show.